Imagine a medical system where instead of, taking a toxic drug to fight a disease, doctors just they extract your immune cells, show them a microscopic, like wanted poster of your exact cancer, and then just release them back into your bloodstream to hunt it down. Like no chemo, no radiation at all, just pure biological intelligence.
And what's totally wild is that the intelligence we're analyzing today, it isn't it's not classifying this as science fiction anymore. Like, it is happening in verified lab procedures right now.
It's crazy. Well, welcome to the Deep Dive, everyone. Today, we are exploring the Great Awakening reports. Specifically, we're looking at the Sleeping Giant Weekly Report for the week of September 7, 2026. And our mission today is very specific. We are mapping out the signals, the patterns, and the threads that are currently weaving together in our world right now.
Yeah, the underlying stuff.
Exactly. And we're relying strictly on the primary research provided in the GAR report.
Yeah.
So just a heads up, we are entirely bypassing mainstream news to look at the raw data underneath it all.
Precisely. We are we're looking at the foundational architecture of what is actually happening rather than just, the surface level commentary you get everywhere else.
Right. And just a quick housekeeping note for you, our listener, if you're someone who likes to learn on the go, or maybe you just want to let these incredibly dense concepts kind of marinate for a bit, there are audio reviews available.
Oh yeah, highly recommend those.
Yeah, it's just another fantastic way to consume this exact content. So definitely keep that tool in your back pocket.
So to kind of set the philosophical stage here, the GAR report operates on the central thesis that it calls the convergence phase.
Okay, the convergence phase.
Right. And the core idea is that humanity is no longer dealing with like individual isolated crises anymore. We are looking at a chain of transmission.
A chain of transmission.
Yeah, so the defining risk of our era isn't, a single catastrophic event. It has several manageable events connecting and transmitting pressure basically faster than the global system can absorb it.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to really understand this transmission, we have to start at the physical choke points of the globe and just watch how that pressure ripples outward.
Right.
So if we look at the geopolitical map, the immediate trigger the report highlights is the Strait of Hormuz. We just saw oil briefly hit, what, $92 amid those renewed U.S.-Iran military exchanges?
Yeah, 92.
But I mean, why is this specific strait always the hair trigger for global anxiety?
Well, it's because it's an inescapable physical bottleneck. I mean, roughly a fifth of the world's total oil consumption passes through that narrow little waterway.
Wow.
So it acts as a rapid transmission mechanism. If a disruption happens there, it doesn't just stay local, right? It instantly reprices the energy required to run literally the entire global economy.
Which is terrifying.
It is. And while that tension spikes, the regional security architecture around it is fundamentally shifting too. The report details the Mecca Joint Defense Agreement.
Oh, right.
Yeah, this is Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Pakistan establishing a permanent secretariat.
Which is a massive deal. Are
Yeah.
they basically building a completely separate alliance system, like separate from the West?
Not completely separate, but what is fascinating here is that major Middle Eastern powers are developing security structures that they complement but are distinctly less dependent on the traditional US-led architecture.
Right, they're pivoting.
Exactly. They are hedging their bets and moving toward regional strategic autonomy because they recognize that broader systemic instability.
And you definitely see that same instability in how diplomacy is functioning right now. Like, look at Ukraine.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect example.
The GAR report points out this wild collision of escalation and diplomacy happening simultaneously. You have this massive drone campaign, Ukrainian unmanned systems striking Moscow airports. But this is happening at the exact same time that U.S. envoys, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, are holding talks with Ukrainian officials and like traveling to Moscow.
Which totally turns our traditional understanding of warfare on its head, right? Because normally escalation means talks broke down. But here, escalation is no longer proof that negotiations have failed. Escalation is being used as the actual leverage for the negotiation. I mean, they are negotiating through the transmission of force.
And here is where it really hits the listener's wallet. Because that geopolitical stress transmits directly into the financial system. The logic chain the report lays out just makes total sense, right?
Right.
War impacts global shipping routes. Shipping constraints make moving energy vastly more expensive. Higher energy prices bake inflation into everyday goods. And then, you know, persistent inflation forces central banks to keep interest rates high.
Which brings us right to the Federal Reserve's September decision. The GAR report accurately describes this as like a knife edge scenario.
A knife edge.
Yeah. You have Fed Chair Kevin Warsh heavily focused on the fact that inflation is incredibly sticky, which, you know, normally means you hike rates. But simultaneously, employment is unexpectedly strong.
Right. Job growth is actually accelerating.
Exactly. And unemployment is sitting at a very comfortable 4.1%.
Okay, so explain this knife edge to me like I'm five.
Hmm.
If jobs are good, why is the Fed sweating so much?
Because they are completely trapped. If they cut rates to ease the pressure on borrowing, they risk reigniting the inflation that is already crushing consumers.
Okay.
But if they keep rates high, they are maintaining incredibly expensive financial conditions. Right at the exact moment, a massive new structural force is demanding, like, unprecedented amounts of global capital.
Right. And you're talking about artificial intelligence.
Exactly.
And this just blew my mind in the report. AI is no longer just a software or a tech story. According to the GAR signals, it is fundamentally a global capital allocation story now.
Yes.
The numbers are staggering. Dell and Foxconn are surging on AI server demand. ByteDance just secured a $29.6 billion bank loan just for AI expansion. U.S. hyperscalers have issued roughly, what, 40 billion in euro-denominated debt.
And we really have to ask why they need that much money. The infrastructure required for AI isn't just code, right? It is intensely physical.
Yeah.
It requires sprawling data centers, massive power generation plants just to run the GPUs, and, like, millions of gallons of water for cooling systems. It is so capital intensive that tech companies are now literally competing with sovereign governments to borrow money.
It's a, think of global capital right now, like a city electrical grid that's experiencing brownouts.
Mm-hmm.
AI is this massive new skyscraper plugging into the grid, drawing so much juice that the older buildings, like traditional equities, are watching their lights flicker.
That's a great way to put it.
The money isn't vanishing. It's just being aggressively rerouted to where the highest voltage is.
Yep.
And you see that in the flow of funds. The report notes that $11.1 billion just left U.S. equities, while almost $48.8 billion flowed into money market funds in a single week.
And for context, you know, money market funds are essentially a safe harbor. They are highly liquid, very low-risk investments.
Ooh.
When almost $50 billion rushes in there, it means capital is becoming highly defensive.
Right, scared.
Yeah, it's sitting on the sidelines, waiting for clarity because the whole system is stressed.
But I want to push back on this for a second. We're talking about wars, inflation traps, capital drains. Does the report suggest we are looking at an imminent systemic collapse of the financial order?
That is a crucial distinction to make, and the report is very specific here. This is not a systemic collapse.
Okay.
There are still major stabilizers functioning. Alternative energy routes exist. Corporate earnings in a lot of sectors are actually strong, and diplomatic channels are clearly still open.
Right.
What we are experiencing is cascading stress. The system remains resilient, but maintaining that resilience is becoming astronomically expensive.
And this defensive hoarding of capital makes perfect sense when you realize the financial system isn't just reacting to human politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to price in highly volatile physical earth changes.
Mm-hmm.
The physical world is pushing back, which brings us to the GAR report as a data on El Nino.
Yeah, the World Meteorological Organization is warning of a historically strong El Nino extending all the way into 2027. And again, this isn't just a weather story. This transmits directly into the food system.
Right. Because if you're out there wondering why your grocery bill is climbing while the news claims inflation is cooling, the GAR report points to a collision between the Black Sea and the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
India's weak monsoon season is directly hurting global rice and corn yields. Combine that agricultural hit with the ongoing Black Sea disruptions that are spiking wheat prices, and global food prices just hit their highest level since 2022.
It's a perfect storm.
Climate and war are teaming up to supercharge the inflation chain.
And what's vital to understand here is the underlying mechanism, right? When the Earth system acts up, it demands infrastructure repairs, it demands emergency funding, political focus.
Right.
It is pulling from the exact same limited pool of capital and resilience that the geopolitical crises are currently draining.
And the weather anomalies right now are just defying conventional modeling. The GIR report highlights Tropical Storm Marie, tracking as 95E. Predictive models suggest it could do something historically unprecedented, hit Southern California as a hurricane.
Which really requires an explanation because hurricanes generally require ocean surface temperatures of at least 80 degrees Fahrenheit to even form and sustain themselves.
Exactly, but the waters off SoCal are currently sitting at like 74 to 76 degrees. It's below the typical threshold, yet the system is drawing enough energy to potentially maintain hurricane strength.
It's wild.
And it's not just Marie. Tropical Storm Edward is poised to hit the Texas-Louisiana border. We saw incredibly tragic flash floods at the Grand Canyon that left two dead. Mount Sinabung in Indonesia just blew 11,500 feet of ash into the sky. It's like the physical board is lighting up all at once.
It really is. And when you have global physical systems and financial systems under immense sustained compression like this, that pressure doesn't just stay in the atmosphere or on Wall Street. It inevitably leaks down into local communities. It begins to fracture the social contract.
And as we dive into this next section from the report, I really want to frame this for our listeners. Let's look at this purely analytically. We are strictly acting as neutral reporters of the GAR text here.
Right, absolutely.
The GAR report compiles a series of highly charged social trends to illustrate what it calls narrative warfare. The argument is that shared reality is breaking down, particularly regarding how justice is defined and applied. Mm-hmm. Again, we're not taking a political side here, just reviewing the report's compilation of these trends.
Exactly. So the report focuses heavily on a perceived disparity, outlining examples of a revolving door justice system, specifically in blue states. It cites the case of Raiden Tanner Coleman, who received 75 days of time served despite a detailed domestic terror plot against ICE agents.
Right.
And it lists Carlton Johnson II, the Minneapolis shooter who had a long history of prior drug and domestic arrests.
It also highlights DeCarlos Brown Jr., who had 14 prior arrests before the fatal stabbing of Rihanna Zarutska in North Carolina. Hmm. And Alexander Jalka, accused of murder, who was granted conditional release from a Virginia mental health facility.
But hold on. When the GAR report points these cases out sequentially like this, are they arguing this is just administrative incompetence, or is this a deliberate ideological shift in how these jurisdictions define justice? Well, the report frames it as a systemic destabilization. So whether it's ideological or administrative, almost becomes secondary to the effect it has on the public.
Right. The outcome is the same.
Exactly. When the system fails to contain repeat violent offenders, the fundamental contract of community safety erodes. The rules no longer seem to apply logically, and that just accelerates public anxiety.
Which perfectly explains the sociological reaction to Lindsey Clancy trial that the report dives into. This has become a massive cultural flashpoint.
It really has.
Clancy strangled her three children. The defense argues it was severe postpartum psychosis, while the prosecution, led by Dr. Sathoff, argues it was deliberate and methodically planned.
But the GAR report isn't just focused on the trial itself. It's focused on the viral social media reaction to it.
Right.
It highlights the same Lindsay trend among a demographic of liberal women and the fact that a support fund raised over $1 million for her defense.
And tragically, the report points to a horrifying copycat case in North Dakota involving Kaylee Renee Earhart. What does it say about our shared reality when $1 million is raised in solidarity for this act? It suggests a profound social contagion effect where immense internal societal pressure is normalizing the unthinkable.
It does. And to balance this observation of societal shifts, the report also documents a contrasting thread, evidence of increasing systemic hostility toward Christians.
Right.
It cites a Maine Supreme Court ruling currently being appealed by Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel, which upheld a decision banning a mother from taking her 13-year-old daughter to Calvary Chapel because the father objected to the theology.
The report also lists a wave of church burnings nationwide, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, Michigan. It notes incidents like pro-lifers being kicked out of Idaho roasters in Idaho. But the one that really illustrates the breakdown of logic for me is the story of Kathy Kite.
Oh.
She's a Missouri grandmother who was told by government officials she needed a commercial kitchen license just to continue feeding her community-free breakfast out of her home. I mean, how do we process a societal structure that strictly regulates a grandmother making free breakfast, but allegedly struggles to contain a violent offender with 14 prior arrests?
And this is the core of the narrative warfare thesis. When the application of law and social norms becomes highly polarized and contradictory, people just lose faith in the institutional framework entirely. Chaos becomes the baseline expectation.
So if the institutions are fracturing, how do we actually process reality? The report suggests we need a totally new framework for analyzing information, right?
Yeah, they call this concept timeline intelligence. The foundational principle is simple but rigorous. The date matters.
Date matters, right.
You never start with the theory or the narrative. You start with the raw receipts, you verify the timestamp of the event, and you watch the actual sequence unfold.
Let's apply that timeline intelligence to the biological news in the report, because it shifts the entire paradigm of what is actually possible.
It really does.
The GAR introduces the Ocugen OCU-410 Phase 3 trial. This is an experimental AAV5 gene therapy for geographic atrophy, which is a condition that causes severe age-related blindness. Currently, the medical standard is injecting medication directly into a patient's eyes every single month,
which is really just managing a chronic decline. But what this trial is testing is a one-time genetic intervention.
One time.
Yeah. An AAV5 vector essentially uses a harmless, hollowed-out virus to deliver a specific genetic payload directly into the cells, instructing them to durably alter the disease pathway. It is a fundamental shift from chronic disease management to actual biological reprogramming.
But the breakthrough we touched on at the very beginning of the show, the teacher cells, is what really stopped me in my tracks. Technically, it's called adoptive cell transfer. Wait, how does a cell actually learn in a lab? Are they like programming it with a microchip?
No, not at all. It's purely biological. Think of it like giving a bloodhound a very specific scent.
Okay.
Researchers extract the unique mutation signature from the patient's own tumor. They then take the patient's immune cells, grow them in a lab, and physically bind that mutation signature to the cell's receptors. They are explicitly training the cells to recognize that specific cancer profile.
And then they put them back into the body, and these teacher cells instruct the rest of the body's T cells on exactly what to hunt. As the report points out, this perfectly mimics the medbed concept that has lived in alternative circles for years.
Right, yeah.
Scan the body, identify the disease, and instruct the body to heal itself from within. But it's not a magical sci-fi pod. It's a verified procedure utilizing our own hidden biological intelligence.
An intelligence we are honestly only just beginning to map. The report expands on this by discussing fascia, the connective tissue matrix in our bodies. Modern medicine historically treated fascia as just biological wrapping paper, you know, just stuff holding the important organs in place.
Right, but the 2018 interstitium research completely upended that.
Exactly. Researchers now understand that fascia acts as a whole body mechanotransduction network.
Mechanotransduction.
Yeah, it's the process where the body converts mechanical force or physical tension into cellular and biochemical signals. And what is truly fascinating is that researchers Lanchuvin and Yanoun mapped this physical network and found an 80% correspondence with ancient traditional Chinese acupuncture meridians.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because if our bodies possess this highly sensitive, interconnected communication network, how does our consciousness interact with it?
That's the big question.
The report dives into the science of manifestation. And importantly, it moves completely past the quantum woo, wish for a sports car, and it appears mythology.
Right. It grounds manifestation in measurable science. It explores neuroplasticity, how focused thought physically alters brain structure. It looks at the very real biological mechanisms of the placebo and nocebo effects, where belief dictates physical healing or decline. It incorporates the decades of data from Dean Radin's peer lab at Princeton regarding mind-matter interaction, and even touches on Carl Jung's concept of synchronicity.
It's essentially about altering your internal biological and psychological state, right?
Yeah.
When you change your intention and expectation, you physically reorganize your nervous system. That reorganization changes your external behavior, which then fundamentally alters your probability landscape.
Exactly.
You aren't magically snapping a new reality into existence. You are biologically tuning your antenna to navigate the reality you're in with completely different results.
However, the GAR report does leave the door open to the deeper mystery. I mean, does consciousness only change the internal person, or does it possess physical properties capable of interacting with probability and matter in ways institutional science just hasn't publicly proven yet?
And if conventional medicine is just now discovering how our biology, our fascia, and our consciousness connect, what has classified deep black science been doing behind closed doors for decades?
The report explores some of the most profound alternative history files to ask exactly that question.
Yeah, I love that the report goes there. Let's look at these with an analytical mind. First, the Montauk Project at Camp Hero on Long Island.
Mm.
On the surface, it was a decommissioned Cold War radar station. But underground, the files allege a project dedicated to weaponizing memory and time using something called the Montauk Chair. They supposedly synchronized this consciousness-amplifying chair with older radar technology, leading to the August 12, 1983 timeline contamination, a catastrophic event where something allegedly crossed through a temporal tear.
Then the report details Project Serpo. This explores a supposed 1965 exchange program where 12 American military specialists were sent to a planet orbiting the Zeta Reticuli binary star system.
It's just wild.
A 10-year mission to a civilization that had allegedly been monitoring Earth's development for millennia.
And the detail that stands out is what happened when they supposedly returned in 1978. The files claim one of the returnees possessed the correct memories and fingerprints, but his physical blood contained cellular structures that reorganized themselves when exposed to radio frequencies.
There it is again.
Again, this theme of biological intelligence responding to unseen signals.
Finally, the GAR details the infamous Dulce base beneath Arcoleta Mesa in New Mexico, specifically a 7-level deep underground facility.
Level 7, Nightmare Hall. The report alleges this level housed unauthorized human and non-terrestrial biological experiments, attempting to fuse human tissue with structures native to completely different environments. And it allegedly ended in a massive containment failure and firefight.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, you know, whether you view these accounts as literal documented historical truths or just as a form of modern mythology, they serve a vital sociological function.
I do.
They act as a mirror. They represent our deep-seated collective intuition that institutional science has crossed ethical and physical boundaries they aren't telling us about. They reflect a profound underlying anxiety that humanity is currently interacting with forces biological, temporal, and cosmic that we do not fully comprehend or control.
What an unbelievable journey we've just taken. We have mapped the cascading transmission of global pressures from the choke points in Hormuz and the Mecca Defense Agreement to the inflation trapping the Federal Reserve and the massive capital drain of AI infrastructure.
Yeah.
We've seen how the physical Earth is pushing back through El Nino and bizarre weather anomalies, stretching our resilience. We've analytically navigated the deep fracturing of our social contracts and justice systems, but we've also explored miraculous, verified medical breakthroughs like teacher cells and gene therapies before finally plunging into the darkest classified mysteries of Montauk and Dulce.
It is the absolute definition of the convergence phase. The isolated threads are now weaving into a single, highly compressed reality.
They really are.
Yeah.
And I want to remind you one more time, if you want to revisit any part of this dense web of information we've unpacked today, definitely check out the audio reviews. It's a highly effective way to digest this material and connect the dots at your own pace.
And as we close out this deep dive, the explicit mandate from the Great Awakening reports is clear. As you navigate the complexities of the week ahead, do so with gratitude, with sharp discernment, and with patience. Don't get lost in the noise of the headlines. Watch the underlying transmission chains.
Which leaves us with one final provocative thought to mull over. We spent a lot of time today talking about how systems are hitting their physical limits, financial grids, agricultural supply chains, geological stability.
We also talked extensively about neuroplasticity and the Princeton Peer Lab studies, which suggest human intention and belief can actively shape our biological and probabilistic reality.
Exactly. So what happens to a highly compressed global system when 8 billion people are simultaneously anxious, expecting a collapse? If our consciousness acts as a mechanotransduction network that interacts with probability, are we just passively watching this convergence phase happen? Or are our collective doom-scrolling expectations actively accelerating it into existence? Something to think about this week.